Yes, good evening, Brother Teo, and fellow Dharma brothers and sisters from Subang and Petaling. Welcome to NBC here, and also good evening, sisters from and Brother Gan from NBC. You'll find that today it seems to be becoming more and more bad in NBC. That's because the Ravan Sada and he has been assigned to Tiratana Vihara. That's a new building in Aman Perdana along the way to Meru. So Chief Ravan Damaratana has assigned him there. So over here, you'll find that the quite a number of things have been shifted over that site. But in any case, Dharma talks will still be held here, as scheduled every second and fourth Friday nights. So we are very thankful, happy and thankful that Brother Teo still accept this Dharma talk over here, and hope if our reception is not as before, so please forgive us. And okay, tonight I think that we have had a series of talks on the 37 factors of enlightenment, Bodhipakkhya Dharma. And tonight, the Eightfold Path is the seventh of the seven groups. The 37 factors of enlightenment has been classified into seven groups. So this is the last and also the most important of the group, which to be able to attain enlightenment, we need to walk this path. And Brother Teo had often been explaining about the Four Noble Truths and this Eightfold Path. So, without taking further time, I'll pass the mic to Brother Teo and let us together take precepts. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Kame sumichachara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Mosavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surame raya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we meet again. Today is the 11th October 2017, Friday. We are now at Tiratana MBC Center, Klang. So tonight's Friday talk, the topic is very, very important. Just like what Brother Tay has shared with you all, it started from a series of 37 factors of enlightenment talk. Then today is the last category. We had the Noble Eightfold Path. So the title of the talk is, as usual, we have to understand the importance of this Noble Eightfold Path as an integral part of cultivation leading to the enlightenment. So this is the title. This is the topic. As we have gone through, the 37 factors of enlightenment, they are all enlightenment factors that can lead to enlightenment. But when you cultivate, there are specific enlightenment factors that can do the work for you faster and more efficiently. Basically, they are the five spiritual faculties. Then when you perfect it, stabilize it, it becomes the five powers. They are all the same, except from one stage you develop until that stability of this five spiritual faculty become unshakable, very, very stable. Then they will develop into very powerful spiritual faculties. They are called spiritual faculty because it can lead you to the understanding of the spiritual teaching that has been taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. Then apart from the five spiritual faculties and the five powers, we have the seven factors of enlightenment, which we covered last month. And this is the core enlightenment factor within the Buddha's teaching. The other 37, they are not so useful as these seven factors of enlightenment, because these are the real factors of enlightenment. But the other factors of enlightenment, they do support the core seven factors of enlightenment, especially the first two of the five spiritual faculty, Saddha and Virya. So from Saddha you develop Virya. That's why Virya is part of the seven factors of enlightenment. But Saddha, which is faith, is not part of the seven factor of enlightenment. But this is a very important enlightenment factor, the faith in the Buddha and his teaching, to develop the spiritual faculty of Virya. So what we have here is the five spiritual faculty leading to the five powers, then the seven factors of enlightenment. And the final accumulating enlightenment factor is the Noble Eightfold Path. And this Noble Eightfold Path is very powerful. If you were to look at the Buddha's teaching, the essence of his teaching, as you all know, is the Four Noble Truths. Within the Four Noble Truths, you have to go through them one by one. Where these Four Noble Truths, they are very unique summary of his teaching. Or we call it the essence of his teaching. Means he summarized all of his understanding, both the mundane and the supramundane, into just this Four Noble Truths. And you can understand everything about life and even within the unconditioned just from this Four Noble Truths. And these are called Noble Truths because they are truths that can bring about enlightenment in the here and the now, so that you can become noble ones. So noble ones in the time of the Buddha, they are called enlightened beings because they are very noble in every aspect of life. they carry with them the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path Factor that the Buddha expounded under the Fourth Noble Truth. So this Four Noble Truth being the essence of his teaching, we have to understand it clearly, if possible, thoroughly, so that when you meditate with understanding, it can lead to true enlightenment. And if we were to check all these Four Noble Truths, they will lead to a clear understanding of the 37 factors of enlightenment, especially the last category of enlightenment factors, Noble Eightfold Path. Under the first Noble Truth, the Buddha proclaimed what they call the reality of life and existence. He said there is a Noble Truth of suffering or dukkha. And this Noble Truth, according to the Buddha, he said, it is prevalent throughout existence, because it involves the realities of life and existence. If you live life, whoever you are, whether you are a high official or ordinary human being or even devas or any living being within the 31 plane of existence, you are not exempted from this reality. If you exist long enough, live life long enough, you will confront these eight realities of life and existence, the Buddha said. And as we all have heard before the teaching, the eight reality refers to birth, old age, sickness and death, separation from loved ones and prized possession or the thing that you hold on to dearly. Yeah. Then the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like. Then the seventh one is when you cannot get what you want in life, when your expectations in life are not met, when things don't go your way, it leads to suffering. Then the final summary is, of course, the Buddha summarized all of dukkha or suffering into the eight realities. He said, in short, all of suffering can be summarized as the attachment, craving or clinging and grasping to this five aggregate of form and mind which we call the human being or the living being. If you deliberately grasp, cling and hold to this five aggregate of form and mind, thinking that they are real and you exist as an individual, that is self-delusion, that is ignorant, and because of that, suffering will arise. That's why in the final summary, the Buddha said, it is the five aggregate of grasping, upanana khandas, that I call dukkha. So the first Noble Truth has nothing to do with the meditation. It's just a proclamation of truth to explain to you the realities of life and existence. And this cover all aspects of life, no matter what you do in life, is all within this first Noble Truth. All of existence is covered under this first Noble Truth reality. Then the Buddha moved on to the second Noble Truth. He said, there is this Noble Truth that explains to you clearly the cause of arising of suffering, how dukkha come to be. And the cause is always craving, born of your ignorance or self-delusion. So this craving, you have to understand, then you have to sever it or abandon it. You have to develop the enlightenment or awakening to liberate your mind, so that it will not cause you suffering or complication, so that you will not be deceived by the phenomenal world. You will not grasp and cling and hold on to this thing. So this first two Noble Truths is very important. The Buddha proclaimed and let you understand. When you go through life, you see, when you confront this reality of life and existence, you will know what suffering is. Then the second noble truth explains to you the cause behind. That's why you have to reflect, contemplate, meditate on it to understand. Then when you understand what suffering is and the cause, you will know how to take care of your life. Then you can manage your life better so that you don't have to, via delusion, go through life confronting all this suffering without understanding why you suffer and without even knowing that these are suffering and without understanding the cause behind. Yeah. So at least with the understanding of the first two noble truths, you can understand basic suffering within life, and you want to be free from suffering, which is the ultimate ideal of the Buddhist practice, is to liberate your mind from all suffering. And to realize this, you have to awaken to the universal characteristics of impermanent suffering state and non-self, or anicca, dukkha, and anatta, non-self or empty nature of existence. Whatever that arises within the conditioned world, they are conditioned arising, dependent originating. Hence, it's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can hold on to, grasp on to, and cling on to, and say, this is me. This am I, and all this can be mine. There is no such thing. All of the conditioned world, they have this universal characteristics of impermanent. So impermanent is the universal characteristics of all phenomena. Then just now I heard Rati, he was explaining that your center also going through some impermanent changes. It seems you will be moving to a new center soon. And you have already started moving some of your things from this place. So this is the universal characteristics of nature. This is life. Existence, Shouwong, will have this, what they call, changes happening due to changing condition, requirements. So impermanence is a universal characteristic where you can see everywhere. In the midst of life and existence, within life, within your own form of mind, the characteristics are everywhere. Why can't you see as a cultivator? For those who see, the awakened one, the enlightened one, they always see, because they are there. They are there in the midst of life and existence, every moment, every instant, so clear, so distinct. So what we need to develop is wisdom. When you have this understanding of this universal characteristic, then you have a choice, like the Buddha say. This is a universal characteristic. It follows that existential law, law of nature. It goes the way of nature. Changes will happen. What you need is, if you have the wisdom and the understanding to accord and flow, then these changes has meaning. It will benefit you. Then you will not suffer. But if you resist change, what happens? What will happen to you? Let's say your center, somehow you may resist. Ayo, this present place is so good. Why must we move? This is so strategic. So near to the Klang city center and all those things. And most of your members are so used to it. But then another group that want the new center will tell you different. We have to grow. We need space. We have a new center. Why not? So if you cannot come to terms with this reality, you will be divided. Then just as I also say, the new committee over there is a completely new committee. There is no old members or committee member. in that new committee. So these are the realities of life and existence. Things can happen because people make decisions, conditions like that, things will be like that. If you know how to echo and flow your understanding and rejoice with all this, then you stand to benefit. Then you stand to develop the understanding of the Dhamma. That's why you can have peace. You can have joy because you know how to rejoice. And you will know how to echo and flow, and things will work out beautifully. Then there is no division, no conflict, nothing. But if you have this thought behind telling you all this story, then you complaining. So what happens is this conditioning will make you become afflicted. Then what happens is you meet your fellow Dhamma friends or members. You discuss, then suddenly what have been going on in your sankhara, they just come out. Oh, then the complaint, the what they call views and opinion that leads to all the misunderstanding or conflict, or what they call justification of to stay or not to stay, depending on which side you take, becomes an issue, a problem. Then as this word gets heard by people and spread, then it becomes conflict, misunderstanding. And this is how things happen, and through small things, because cultivator fail to develop the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching, which is today's topic, the Noble Eightfold Path. If you have the Noble Eightfold Path, all this will not happen. You will know how to develop the understanding to accord and flow and develop all the wholesomeness according to Noble Eightfold Path. And these are enlightenment factors leading to enlightenment. So coming back to the Four Noble Truths, just now I stopped at the Second Noble Truth. Then I elaborate on the Three Universal Characteristics. It's only when you have awakened to the Three Universal Characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature, then only you have the ability to liberate your mind, to free your mind from all suffering, from all attachment, from all delusion. Then only the Third Noble Truth becomes clear to you, possible to you. That's why in the Third Noble Truth, the Buddha proclaimed, there is a Third Noble Truth that explains clearly to you the possibility of enlightenment. Nibbana in the here and the now can be realized. And this is the Noble Truth that explains to you the possibility of enlightenment if you can cultivate according to his teaching, leading to the cessation of all suffering, means the realization of Nibbana, which is the cessation of form and mind. So this Third Noble Truth gives you a lot of faith, a lot of confidence, a lot of means give you a very strong understanding that suffering need not be, understand? If suffering need not be because this enlightenment is possible, then there is a way out of suffering. Then you see there is light at the end of the tunnel. So life is not just suffering. Life is an understanding. When you understand what suffering is and the cause behind, then you can manage your life better. You can do something about your life. Then you can develop the understanding to free your mind, to develop this enlightenment. So if you look at this first three number 12, they all explain to you the reality of life and existence and the cause behind all suffering and how suffering can be ended. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible, but it didn't teach you how to do it. That's why you have to move on to the fourth noble truth. And the fourth noble truth is our topic proper today, The Buddha mentioned clearly under the fourth noble truth, he said, there is this noble eightfold path. If you were to cultivate it, it will lead to the end of all suffering. This is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, the noble eightfold path. That's why this is the final set of enlightenment factors. The noble eightfold path is the path that will lead to the end of all suffering, leading to the enlightenment, leading to the realization of Nibbana, cessation of form and mind. So now all focus is on this noble eightfold path. So I will write the path factor down. For those who maybe already know what they are, maybe you can help out. What are the noble eightfold path factors? Noble eightfold path factors. First one is what? First one is right view or right understanding. Second one? What is the second one? Right thought. Right thought. Then? Third one? Third one is what? Right speech. Then? Right action. Very good. Then? What else? Livelihood. Actually, it should be right living. Right living. Right living. So, right livelihood is part of right living, the way you live your life. If it's in accordance with the Dhamma, then you have this right living path factor. Then number six is what? The four right effort. Right effort. Then seven, right mindfulness. Then the last one is what? Right samadhi. Actually, concentration is not the right word. It's right samadhi. So these are the eight path factor within Noble Eightfold Path. And this Noble Eightfold Path is just one path. You must get this right. It's not eight paths. There are eight path factors, but it's only one path. Understand? That's why you have to complete this training in order to become enlightened. Otherwise, a lot of people will just do this one. They will just do these two. This one and this one, the seven and the eight path factor. The seven one is what? What do you cultivate? Samasati, what do you cultivate? very good. You cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Because the Buddha mentioned it clearly in the Satipatthana Sutta. He told the monk, Ekayano Bhikkhave Bhikkhu. O Bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, leading to the right enlightenment or right path and the realization of Nibbana. So, these four foundations of mindfulness, foundation of mindfulness is the core practice. And these four foundations, by now, I think you all should be familiar. Four foundation of mindfulness. They are kaya, vedana, citta, and dhamma. So you have the first foundation, mindfulness on your kaya, your physical body, your action, your movement, your whatever vibration within the kaya. So we call that kaya anupassana, the first foundation of cultivation. Then the second foundation is vedana nupassana, mindfulness of feeling. And feeling, there are a few types. They got pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, and neutral feeling. Yeah. And you have to understand them through mindfulness. See them. Awaken to them. Be mindful of them. Then according to Satipatthana, the four foundation of mindfulness, you develop the wisdom out of it, the understanding. Then you will understand why the Buddha, when he teach the dependent origination, Paticca Samuppada, how upon contact between mind and your sense basis, feeling arise, and how when feeling arise, it condition craving. Craving got three types. Positive, negative, and neutral. That's like the three types of feeling. The sensual craving is one of them. Then you have craving for existence and craving for non-existence. And these three types of craving will determine where you end, how it lead to the whole mess of suffering towards the end of the day. So without wisdom, without understanding, this feeling you cannot deal. That's why under the four foundation of mindfulness, it teaches you to understand this feeling. That's why it's one of the foundation, because this is the mind state, or what they call aggregates of mind, that is before craving. Not until you have the wisdom at the moment of sense experience. We call that yoniso manasikara. Yoniso is wise. Manasikara is attention. Wise attention at the moment of sense experience. If you don't have this, straight away, feeling will be conditioned into craving. You cannot cut at feeling. You cannot stop at feeling. But for the enlightened being, this feeling will never become craving. Feeling will remain as pure feeling. That's why it's not a grasping aggregate. It's not upadana khandas. And that is what the four foundation of mindfulness is all about. That's why the Buddha said, when you develop mindfulness of feeling, you silence your mind and just aware. Then what did the Buddha say? Yeah? When there is this pleasant feeling, what must you do? You have to be aware of it in there. Aware means what? You aware means you know this feeling is no longer feeling, understand not? It has been conditioned into what? Positive craving. Because it's a positive feeling. What is positive feeling? You like that feeling, isn't it? That's why it's positive, isn't it? That's why it's very pleasant, isn't it? So the first two mental hindrances is what? What are the first two mental hindrances? The five mental hindrances that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. What are the first two? Sensual desire and ill will. What is sensual desire? Ill will. What is sensual desire? What is ill will? This is your? What type of feeling? What type of feeling is it? This is your pleasant feeling lah. Understand? Because it's a desire, you want it. That's why this is pleasant feeling. And the second one is what? Second one is unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling. Well, this one I have to write smaller and smaller. We don't have a big board for you, so sorry. So when you are aware, means the Buddha is trying to explain to you that this sensual desire and ill will, which are the first two mental hindrance, has already arisen. Then what will it do to you? What will it do to you? If these are mental hindrance, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, isn't it? True or not? Then, you somehow go and meditate and create mental hindrance. Then what are you doing? You're supposed to be aware that the mind has stirred. Feeling has become pleasant and unpleasant feeling. Or even neutral feeling, because there is such thing as indifferent. Neutral feeling is not upekkha, anasana. If you have the enlightenment factor of upekkha, then it's different, which is equanimity of mind. There is no positive or negative craving. But sometimes it's due to indifference, there's nothing to do with you. You got no attachment, you got no worry. That's why you got neutral feeling. It doesn't affect you, anasana. You somehow can joke about it. But that is also a negative mental state because there is delusion. That's why sensual desire and ill will are also the evil root of greed and hatred. Then neutral feeling that has this indifference is delusion, abhijja, or moha. So when you have this condition, you're supposed to be aware that feeling has become mental hindrance, or the evil root is arising, greed, hatred, and delusion. So when you are aware, then you know what to do. Because you are aware that it has become that. That's why later in the Citta Nupassana, the third category of training, the third foundation of mindfulness, Citta Nupassana, you go deeper than feeling. You go into the content of consciousness. You not only classify them as pleasant and unpleasant, you go into that state of feeling. When the citta has this content of consciousness of greed, selfishness, covetousness, desire, lust, and all those things, you have to be aware. So this third foundation is a deeper training. Then when there is this anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, unpleasant state of mind, or unhappy mind, sorrow, lamentation, various type of negative emotion, fear, worry, anxiety, phobia, insecurity, they are all born of the evil root of delusion or ignorance. So all this is what the training is all about. When you are aware that the evil roots are there, it will make you evil. So what must you do? You have to? How you all cultivate one? Under your daily life to arise the four right effort to abandon it, isn't it? Then have the understanding to prevent it from arising. If you can't even do it in the midst of life, how are you going to awaken? You can't. That's why in the meditation, you don't go and create mental hindrance. You go and note pain, pain, pain. What is pain? Unhappy feeling, unpleasant feeling. And this is mental hindrance. Hinders your mind from in the meditative state. That's why you cannot become peaceful. You cannot meditate. And you somehow go and note, verbalize. You're not supposed to do all this. You're supposed to be aware under Dhammanupassana, the fourth foundation. The first category of practice is mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. You're supposed to be aware that these are mental hindrances. And the Buddha said, you silence your mind just to be aware, don't label. Don't verbalize, don't create mental hindrance, then what happened? What happened to you? You don't create mental hindrance, means no mental hindrance. Your mind will not be hindered from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why your silence will create the condition for sati to take over. That's how your silent mind can make you understand and be aware. Then you will come to understand how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. How the sensual desire of pleasant, unpleasant, or sensual desire and you will come to be. Because before it arises, it was not there. Then how did it arise? Because of your delusion, your conditioned mind, conditioned thinking, your views, your opinion, and your reaction to sense experience. Because you are so conditioned. Your views, your opinion, your tradition, your religious belief, your perception of things, the way you see things, according to your views, opinion, and conditioning. That's why you react to sense experience. You keep on creating mental hindrance. When you understand all this, the teaching, then when you meditate with a silent mind, what happens is it will cease to be. When it ceases to be, then you come to understand how the arisen sensual desire and ill will cease to be. Then later on, when you have developed the stability of this understanding, then you will come to understand how in the future all this sensual desire and ill will cannot arise anymore within your own form and mind. Where there is this understanding, this wisdom, you are no longer deluded or deceived by the phenomenal world. You by then would have realized the universal characteristics, awakened to it. The impermanent universal characteristic, the suffering state and the non-self or empty nature. So all this has to do with the four foundations of mindfulness training. But as I said, this four foundation of mindfulness training can give rise to understanding and wisdom, awakening. But then it doesn't make you a noble one yet. Do you understand why? Because you still have to break your right view. If you don't have right view, you cannot give rise to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So to do all this, you have to apply the four right effort. This is still thought-based. Then after that, it will help you to develop the right thought, right speech, right action, and right living or right livelihood. Then you have to meditate. You don't use thought anymore, no more effort. You have to silence your mind, develop the meditative understanding to awaken to it. That's why from the first turning, proclamation of truth, through hearing, listening, the Dhamma, you awaken. That is the first turning. Wisdom born of hearing the teaching or the sutta, sutta maya panya. Then when you reflect, contemplate on what you have heard or read about, then it leads to another level of wisdom. They call it Chintamaya Panya, wisdom born of contemplation, reflection, inquiry. Then it will stabilize your understanding, whatever you have learned, read, or listened. When you reflect, contemplate, it will stabilize the understanding. Then you can assimilate it into your nature. Then this will stabilize and allow you to develop the awakening. It will prepare the base for you to receive truth, to awaken the truth under the third turning. Then during the third turning, it is bhavana maya panya, wisdom born of meditative training, the bhavana practice or cultivation. So this is how you develop the three types of wisdom, leading to the final third turning wisdom, which is the awakening. So these are all the important cultivation. Then without sati, mindfulness, you cannot stabilize it. It cannot become samadhi. Samadhi is the collectedness of mind. Collectedness, and unwavering. mind, collected and unwavering mind. Yeah? This samadhi is needed for you to awaken, to see things as they are. Because at the moment of sense experience, before your wisdom come, if you don't have this samadhi, it will waver. Your mind will stir, waver, and it cannot do the work. It has got no stability to see things as they are, to awaken to phenomena, to its universal characteristic. That's why you must have this samadhi. And this samadhi must be from mindfulness, a free mind, but in a state of silence, stillness, very stable. That's why daily mindfulness must have sati and samadhi leading to the direct seeing, which is seeing things as they are, not according to your conditioning, your memory, your views, your opinion, and your knowledge. All this is from the brain. It's not the truth. You have to insight into phenomena, awaken to it. And it's beyond thought, beyond mind, not what you think. So this is what cultivation is all about. And the Noble Eightfold Path factor, according to the Buddha, he started off with the path factor of right view or right understanding. And this is a very important path factor. So now I will begin officially the explanation of why this Noble Eightfold Path factor is a very important integral part of meditation or cultivation that can lead to the enlightenment. Enlightenment, according to the Buddha, must have this Noble Eightfold Path. That's the reason why you can recall in the past, I always said, whatever you do in the name of meditation, if it does not lead you back to the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, then that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because the Buddha specifically under the Fourth Noble Truth states, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, only it will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now. Can follow? Yeah? So you have to bear this in mind. So you don't think you go into retreat, do all the fantastic meditation with all the fantastic mind state, then you think you already awakened and enlightened. But the way you live your life is so crude. You don't even have the appropriate right view, which is the wisdom perfecter. Then you don't even have right thought, right speech, right action, and right understanding to live life. Then you never even cultivate the four right effort, and you expect to be enlightened. Then you haven't even developed the correct sati, mindfulness, to cultivate the real satipatthana. Then you haven't stabilized that mind to become samadhi. Instead, you go into concentration, one-pointedness, absorption, and all those things, and experience all those fantastic mind states, thinking that you have become somebody very advanced, very good in meditation. You thought you have progressed a lot, but then you still haven't developed the true awakening or the true understanding of the Dhamma. Then you will come to realize one very key thing. When you are out of the retreat, go back to daily life, you will come to realize your evil roots are still there. Your fear, your greed, your insecurity, your selfishness, your craving, your desire, they are all still there. Nothing has changed. You only have more knowledge, trying to use your thought to live what you think is the enlightened state. You try to live like an enlightened being, using knowledge. Enlightened being must not have craving. So what you do? Good food also dare not eat. Understand? Scared people say, I got craving. I still, then dare not get angry. Yan. Then have to force yourself to talk to people nicely. If you cultivate that way, then too bad. That is not the teaching. That's why the real cultivation must have this embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path, so that you are very noble in all aspects of life. So now we start. The first path factor is right view. You're very noble in your understanding of life. That's why you must have this right view. So what are the three important right views? What are they? What are they? Three types of right view. What are they? First one is what? Right view regards to what? Very good. Law of karma. This one is key, fundamental. Because the Buddha said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. That's why this is a very powerful right view, right understanding. You don't have this, you cannot start your cultivation. And this is how the Buddha's advice come about. Because the Buddha, in the teaching, the five daily contemplation, he advised the monk, every day you must contemplate this five daily contemplation. The first four relate to the first noble truth reality. The first three refer to birth, old age, sickness and death, your physical body. He said, this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. Then the fourth contemplation is, whatever we think we own, our loved ones, our prized possession, the things that we cling on to and hold on to dearly, they have their condition of arising. When the condition cease to be, they will separate from you. So separation from loved one and prized possession and the things that you hold on to, cling on to dearly, is a reality of life. It will happen. Either they separate from you first, when conditions cease to be, or when your breath stops, you lose your identity, you separate from them. Either way, you don't own them. That's why in the Mahayana teaching is very good. He said, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na mo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei. You understand the meaning, right? He said, when you come to this world, you come empty-handed. True or not? When you are born into this world, do you bring along anything? You don't come and tell me, I inherit from my father, my mother, I got a lot of wealth. But when you are born, you got nothing. You come, nothing, empty. When you die, can you take along anything? You can't, either. That's why you come empty-handed. You separate and go empty-handed. Then why do you in between grieve over emptiness? Become so miserable, afflicted. Sometimes small, small, petty things make you miserable, unhappy. Of course, there are also major things that can lead to a lot of suffering, misery, sorrow, lamentation, deep sadness, leading to depression and all this thing. These are the reality. Then the Buddha said, apart from these four, you should reflect the last one, which we already mentioned just now. He said, you should reflect each and every one of us, not only me or you, all living beings. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if karma plays such a great role in your life, that's why every day you have to reflect and contemplate. Then you ask yourself, if I want to have the good life, what must I do? What must you do? What must you do if you have this understanding? You have to take care of your karma, otherwise you'll be miserable, afflicted. Because you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are every moment, every instant, because of your karma. If you don't want to take care of karma, nobody can help you. instead of taking care of karma, you know, living being do what? The deluded one. They go and believe feng shui. They go and believe the bomb wall. Yeah? The medium and all those things. Then the fortune teller. Then they go and do all the funny things that people tell them, thinking that it will help them improve their life, make their business prosper, and have more prosperity. Then they have this, what they call, some they go and buy this, the tree, what? Choi San Ye. Yeah? You call what? Chai San Ye in English is what? Huh? The three Chinese dainty. Fu Lu So. Yeah? The god of longevity, prosperity, and what is the third one? So is longevity, Fu is prosperity, fortune. Understand? So prosperity, fortune, and longevity. You think by buying the three dainty, it can bring you longevity, fortune, and blessing or not? I tell you, you can forget about it. Unless you take care of karma. But that is the only reality according to this law. That's why the Buddha's advice comes from this. How do you take care of karma? You have to avoid all evil, do good. That is what karma is all about. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. You plant the seed of evil. That's why the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, the Buddha taught you. When you have this evil root, it makes you evil. That's why you will create karmic negativity. It will cause your downfall. And you reap what you sow. You have to pay back all this karmic debt. And you cannot run. That's why without mindfulness, without heedfulness, to see your mental intention clearly, without your understanding of what constitutes evil, you cannot cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Even right thought, right speech, right action, right life, you cannot cultivate. You need mindfulness, you need heedfulness. That's why this whole thing is one path. That's why you need to train your mind to be aware, the first factor of enlightenment, sati, mindful. Then only you can develop the contemplative wisdom leading to the awakening and the penetration of the right view. Initially, you must have some knowledge of this right view through the first turning, hearing of the proclamation by the Buddha. If I have known that this is the law that decides my life, then I will know what to do. Then I have to keep my precept to avoid all evil. Because those who violate precept, they commit evil. They have the evil root. You can check. Who kill, who harm, who commit sexual misconduct, tell lie, deceive people, partake intoxicant, selfish people, angry, emotional people, deluded people. They do all this. That's why if you keep your precept, the five precept, your major evil are not possible. It will cap you, prevent you from arising the major evil. Then after that, you have to develop goodness, wholesomeness. You not only avoid all evil, you have to develop goodness, wholesomeness, kindness, gentleness, pleasantness. That brings us to the second, third, fourth, and fifth power factor. Then you need the sixth to purify initially at the thought level. So to cultivate wholesomeness, you need to cultivate arise the right effort to cultivate the right thought that are still not in you. Thought that is beautiful. Thoughts that are beautiful. That are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Means thought that is non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And what are the thoughts that has this quality? That's why you have to understand what constitutes right thought. Thought of loving kindness, metta, compassion, sympathetic joy, able to rejoice in the wholesomeness of whatever that arises or what people do. Then thought of generosity, kindness, gentleness, pleasantness. Then thought of gratitude, respect, sincerity, patience. So all these are virtue qualities of mind that don't have the evil roots. And you should train your mind to have more and more of this. That's why you arise the right effort to cultivate the right thought that are still not in you. Then the right speech that are still not in you. All the pleasant, gentle, and appropriate good speeches, kind speeches, that brings about understanding, harmony, leading to goodness, leading to the blessing for all of humanity. That's why you can become a blessing to all when you have this right thought, appropriate right speeches. That can bring about understanding, harmony, peacefulness, joy. That's why you can give love, give joy, give happiness, the gift of life. You will bring about a lot of what they call happiness, joy, and kindness that can touch the heart of living being. That's why right thought, right speech, and right action can bring forth this ability in you. That's why the enlightened being, they have this. They can counsel suffering beings. They can let them develop the understanding and give them the confidence and help them to develop the right understanding, to liberate their mind, to free their mind. Then by doing that, you can truly be a blessing to all. You can help to take across living being, liberate living being from samsara, free them from suffering. And this is what the great beings do. That's why as a bodhisattva who go this way, you have this ability. That's why you must penetrate and cultivate all dhammas, especially noble eightfold path. All of your action will be free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. You act sincerely, kindly, pleasantly, with understanding. All of your right action is non-greed, non-hatred, non-emotional, and non-delusion. And it brings about a lot of good result. Like, if you act in a very generous way, your generosity can touch the heart of many, can help a lot of suffering beings, can improve society's living condition, can improve our world's ecology, like recycling and all those things. Then your metta that you radiate out, then your generosity donation that help out in helping the world to recover from whatever pollution or detrimental environmental states. So all this is what the teaching is all about, and it's possible to develop them if you have this understanding. Then after that, you have the right living. The way you live your life must be in accordance with Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you must have all these noble qualities of the Noble Eightfold Path. So the first quality is right view. You are very noble in the way you understand life. You understand that is this law of karma, and your form and mind, the five aggregate of form and mind, is subject to karma. This one is within the conditioned world, it's not free. You have to understand that. And this form and mind got a duty. That's why the enlightened beings of the Buddha, when you chant the salutation to the Sangha, what are the four noble qualities of this enlightened being? Every day you chant it there. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. What is the meaning? The order of the monk, of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, is of what conduct? Good conduct. Then, the second one is what? Upright conduct. Then the third one, wise conduct. The last one, dutiful conduct. You do your duty, understand? As a human being, as a parent, as a kid, as an employer, as an employee, as a good neighbor, as fellow human being, you have your duty towards what? The law of nature, which is this law of karma. That's why you cannot play a fool with karma. So this is what the teaching is all about. If you don't have this quality and you say you enlightened, you don't have good conduct. Good conduct means what? Right speech, right action, right thought, right living. And you have all the other noble quality of the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why you have good conduct. And you are very upright. You cannot be corrupted. People cannot bribe you and persuade you to maybe close one eye and give them approval and all those things. Or gain something out of that, whatever business or trade or negotiation. That's why there is a lot of politics in our society. Even I heard religious society or organization also got politics, not only politicians got politics. Even in the office, there's a lot of politics, office politics. Even in the household, sometimes there's politics. That's why human mind that is deluded without the Noble Eightfold Path. Politics everywhere, division everywhere, misunderstanding, fighting, quarreling everywhere. Because of the evil root born of delusion. So this law of karma is very powerful. So when you have this right view, you will have this understanding of this law. And you will know it's not worthwhile to violate this moral causation. Because you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. You want to be happy, to have the good life, you have to take care of your karma. If you are kind to people, good to people, the fruition of it is people will be kind to you, good to you. If you deceive and cheat and cause suffering and misery by taking advantage of people, then in future when you come, you'll be like a victim. People will cheat you, deceive you, dumb you, and do all those funny things to you. Then if you are so negligent in your duty as a parent, you go and drink, you go and gamble, you go and intoxicate yourself, and you neglect your duty as a father to bring up your family, to look towards your family's need, food, shelter, food and shelter, and maybe basic education and all those things, and you can't provide for them. So in future, when you come to this world, you become a victim. You were born into a family with this type of father that will mistreat you again and you treat you. Then you don't complain. How come my dad like that? How come my mom like that? It's because you reap what you sow. And this is what the law of karma is about. And this is a very powerful right view. Then the second right view is what? Law of what? Law of? Good. Mind. Chitta. That's why this is Chitta Niyama. That one is Karma Niyama. So Chitta Niyama is referring to how you function as a human being, how your mind works. So this is the dependent origination. Dependent origination. Paticca Samuppada. Or 12 link. So this one, you have to meditate on it to have this right view. The law of mind, how you function as a human being, how this mind can be developed into such beautiful state, how the enlightenment factor, mind state, can come about. Then how with mindfulness and samadhi, you can see the 12 link dependent origination. Then you can awaken to the truth and insight into phenomena to clearly understand the anatta nature of all existence, the universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. You will be able to realize it, to awaken to it. Then the third right view is what? What is the third right view? Law of what? No. That one is the second one. This one is Dhamma Niyama, understand or not? Dhamma Niyama. All of truth as taught by the Buddha. Nature's truth. That's why it's an order of Dhamma. First one is order of the law of karma. Second one is order of the mind. Third one is order of the teaching, the truth as taught by the Buddha. And what is the essence of the teaching as taught by the Buddha? What is it? At the beginning, I just told you. So this one, the third right view, is to understand the Four Noble Truths. You understand the Four Noble Truths, you will understand this Dhamma Niyama. Then you will know clearly the secret of life, both mundane and supramundane. And this is how you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And this is the path factors. If you combine them all into one path, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, it can lead to the enlightenment, the awakening in the here and the now. Nibbana can be realized. So basically, this is what the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path is all about. When it comes to cultivation, what I have given you today is just a summary of what this is. But the real cultivation, you really have to develop the understanding first. That's why there are three phases of Dhamma. Phase one is pariyatti, the learning of the teaching, the doctrine as taught by the Buddha. And pariyatti need to be understood. Because if you don't understand, you cannot put it into cultivation. That's why phase two of the Dhamma is patipatti. Means you put this Dhamma that you have learned into practice or cultivation so that it can become a part of you, so that this Noble Eightfold Path can manifest within your own form and mind. You can have the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path factor in you. You not only have knowledge of Noble Eightfold Path. Phase one gives you the knowledge. It may not give you the clear awakening and understanding. But when you put it into practice and you awaken to it, then you can develop the awakening or the enlightenment. And that part is very important. So how do we put it into practice? That's why we have to develop according to what I taught you just now. The first right view itself is so powerful. So after you have understood all that I have explained just now, then you know you have to take care of karma. And then you start to understand why the Buddha's advice come that way, because that comes from this right view. Then the Buddha just say, you need to do three things. Avoid all evil. Do good. Purify your mind. And I tell you, that is your whole lifetime's work to do that. To avoid all evil, no, not avoid evil, no. It's already an arduous task, not that easy. You need to have mindfulness, understanding of what constitutes evil, and ever mindful of this evil root. That's why you have to cultivate continuously in the midst of life. You have to train your mind in the form of meditation. That's why the Buddha said you need to develop heedfulness. Dhammapada verse 23. Constantly meditative, ever mindful. Then stick with this cultivation, the steadfast one. If you hold on to this practice, you will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana, in the here and the now. So this is guaranteed. And the Buddha under Dhammapada verse 21 says, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die. And the heedless eye is there. So what you need to cultivate is heedfulness. And you have to understand what is heedfulness. It's Dhammapada verse 21. Sorry, 23. So heedfulness got two parts. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. Means train your mind to be aware, mindful. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful so that there is the leading to samadhi. Then only can use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And that is the whole practice. So this part is very useful. And once you clear the second phase of Dhamma, you will get to reap the third phase of Dhamma, which is the most beautiful part of your life. They call it the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda. Pativeda is The third phase of Dhamma where you got to reap the fruit of your hard work, your cultivation under phase two. After you have awakened, liberated your mind, you will have this enlightenment that allow you to live the life of an enlightened being. Then you can live life to the fullest. You can experience life to the fullest. Then you can get to really, really understand life so clearly. Then life become meaningful, beautiful. Then you can realize the pristine nature within life. Then you can experience all of the wonders and beauties of life. All this will become possible and is the fruit of your practice, and you will receive them. That's why your life will take a turn and become so beautiful, so meaningful. No more suffering. There is just understanding, joy, peacefulness of mind, clarity of mind. You are in a state of continuous, ever mindful state. Then later on, when you can go beyond, your mind transform again, your mundane mind collapse, your true nature shine forth. Then you are just beautiful beings that form a mind, which is not you, although connected to the wisdom, the understanding. That's why that form a mind no longer suffer, because it's connected to this awakening, this understanding. But that one is not you. And all this you will understand. So regarding the cultivation, there is a lot more to go into. But I believe what I have shared with you today, you can understand, is good enough. And you will progress really, really fast. Provided you understand all this teaching, then put it into practice. Then you will become very different. Then you cultivate with understanding, you meditate with understanding, and you will become very, very different, very beautiful. So with this, I will end my tonight sharing. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you got any question? You can ask while I have a drink. So good news, everything understood, no question. Very good. Any part you're not sure or not clear, you can ask. You just put up your hand, they will pass you the mic. So make full use of whatever time we have. We still got about 20 minutes or so. Tonight's topic, is it clear? I saw a few nod head, but no sound come out. Still very shy. The Buddha Dhamma is not difficult, it's very easy when you understand. But when you don't understand, it's really, really not easy. Okay, Anybody?
Brother Teo.
Yes, Brother Teo.
I mentioned before in the past. And maybe you can explain. Some of us here do not quite understand. In the Heart Sutra, Right, Guan Yin has mentioned that in the void there is this
yeah.
low eightfold path.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
you explain.
Okay, how. Very good. So what Brother Tee is trying to ask is, he said he has discussed this many times with us, and he also heard from me many times, even at the retreat. In the Mahayana teaching, the Sutta, especially the Heart Sutta, there is one part where Kuan Yin told Sariputta, he said, in true emptiness, there is no old age, sickness, and death. There is no Four Noble Truths. There is no enlightenment or attainment of enlightenment and all these things. It appears very contradictory. Yeah. So, Brother Tee, out of compassion for others who may not understand, so he would like me to explain this to you so that you may understand. Why is it that the Heart Sutta that states clearly, in true emptiness, this word is very important. You have to understand this word in order to understand that part of the teaching. In true emptiness. What is true emptiness? Yeah? True emptiness is what? When you mention this, in true emptiness, this word emptiness is very important. It means you have realized the true understanding of emptiness. You have penetrated the void. It means you have insight into all phenomena and realize that they are all empty. That's why in the teaching, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva also told Sariputta, he said, Sariputta, he said, when Kuan Yin Bodhisattva was cultivating the Prajnaparamita Sutta, means the perfection of wisdom, then he came to a stage where his nature was able to illuminate into the five aggregate of form and mind. Yeah. You all had to meditate until you insight into it and awaken. He can use his perfection, his clarity of mind, to illuminate into the whole fiery of form and mind. Then he realized it was all empty. See? That is a very powerful statement. Emptiness itself is so powerful. Empty and yet not empty. Where is word, concept. Empty is very, very penetrative. That's why in true emptiness, empty doesn't mean nothing, understand that? Like you say, this space is empty. The scientists will refute you, understand that? You say, no, got air. And then you say, outer space is empty. They say, no, got ether, and other things. So what is empty? That's why the phenomenal world is the world of what? World of consciousness. Because mind make a day, like the Buddha explained. From consciousness it comes. But to realize true emptiness, there is no mind. Because this is enlightenment. This is awakening. This is the realization of Nibbana, which is the unconditioned. That's why within the unconditioned, there is no birth, no old age, no sickness, and no death. Because that eternal nature was never born. That's why it never gets old, never gets sick, and never dies. That is not subject to karma. These are the law of nature within the conditioned world. These are the conditioned dhamma. So conditioned dhamma are different. That's why within the conditioned world, there is such a thing as a form of mind, a living being, a human being. There is such a thing as karma. And this form of mind, which is the living being, or the human being, is subject to the law of karma. But it is not you. This is karmically conditional for your nature to come to this world. To go through life. To exist through life. It may be due to karma for most people who are not enlightened, the Buddha jhanas. You are born of your karma. That's the reason why the Buddha stated that. Add to your karma, condition is supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. But then if you already have the enlightenment, and you go the bodhisattva way, and you know how to come back, like I always use the word, you choose to come. Not you have to come. Have to come means karma forced you to come. You have to come. Because you have not realized the enlightenment. You have not understood who the builder of this house is all about. Like the Buddha, after his enlightenment, he said, "House builder, you have been seen. You shall build no more house." Yeah. So craving, due to ignorance, has already been seen clearly. That's why he gave this very good saying. He said, "Thy rafter has been broken, thy ridge pole shattered." Means to build a house, you need the roof, you need the rafter hang from the ridge pole. All the rafter broken, and the ridge pole also, what they call, completely destroyed, demolished. Yeah. So when that happened, the house cannot be built. And that's the analogy the Buddha gave. And all this refer to the conditioned world. That's why within the conditioned world, there is Dhamma. There is Noble Eightfold Path. There is Four Noble Truths. There are all the essential Dhamma. There is old age, sickness and death. There is birth. There is enlightenment and all those things. There is suffering. There is misery. There is samsara. All this exists within the conditioned world. But within the unconditioned, nothing. Because the unconditioned, no word, beyond thought, beyond word, beyond time. You cannot describe, you cannot talk about it. It's the cessation, complete cessation of form and mind. Even the pure awareness also sees nothing. Although you say nothing, yet it is everything. Because it's from there, the source, the oneness, everything arrives. That's why without the true penetrative awakening and understanding, you cannot understand the wisdom of both the conditioned world and the unconditioned. You cannot understand life. You cannot live life. You don't know how to come. You don't know how to understand all this. That's why you need this wisdom. The wisdom born of true awakening, true realization of emptiness. That's why in true emptiness, all these don't exist. That's why those enlightened beings that has this understanding, they will not be deluded anymore. The form and mind will not be deluded anymore. The phenomenal world has got no power over them. And nothing in this world can deceive or delude or entice them into doing anything. But it doesn't mean in true emptiness there is no Noble Eightfold Path, no Four Noble Truths, then you no need to cultivate. No, you are in the conditioned world. Your form and mind is within the conditioned world. And this is the, what they call karmically conditioned form and mind. And the summation of this is what we call your segmented life, this segment of your life when you come into existence. Then you have been, let's say, born and die over the long period of samsara, let's say billions and billions and billions of years. Every life you come, there is one segment, one segment, one segment, one segment. Then the summation of all these segments, they will form your karmic nature. Yeah. That's why you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma. So every segment of this is like you exist, you are real, but they are not you. Because they are dependent, originating, condition arising, karmically conditional. When the three things that support the existence of the segmented life exist, then you exist, you animate as a living being. And because you are born into this conditioned world, you have to take care of karma. That's why this form of mind, even though not you, you have to cultivate. You have to develop this understanding and take care of, so that in future, when you need to come or have to come, or choose to come, you have beautiful karmic nature, where you already have this understanding of the secret of life. You know how to cultivate. You know how to perfect yourself. You know how to avoid all evil, life after life. Cultivate wholesomeness. Develop the perfection of wisdom to the four basic vows of a great bodhisattva or great being. And through all this understanding, you continuously perfect your karmic nature until you are so different, so powerful. It can cause things to arise. It can develop a lot of understanding, a lot of good karmic inheritance. And this is how the great beings will have beautiful form of mind when they come. And they will inherit all this virtue, perfection, understanding that they have cultivated before. Then as they develop the cultivation, they perfect another aspect of their nature. We call it the spiritual nature. Your sambhogaya kaya, spiritual nature, that just like your karmic nature, is the summation of all your perfection and cultivation over the aeons and aeons of birth and death that you come as a living being. That as you perfect this, it will develop into another nature which we call spiritual nature. But this spiritual nature is very funny. It's not like your karmic nature. Immediately you are born into this world, the law of karma, your karmic nature, take over. You are born of it. You are heir to it. You inherit everything. Then you are conditioned and supported by that karmic nature. And you are what you are because of that karmic nature. That's why straight away, it really come and take charge of your life. If you don't take care of karma, you will suffer. You will become afflicted, miserable. That's what life is all about. That's why the key to life is, if you want to change your life, have good karma, and have good life destiny, you have to take care of karma. That's it, nothing else. Then this is the understanding that you need. If you don't have this understanding, whenever you come, you will have problem. But the spiritual nature, on the other hand, is very different. Immediately when you are born into this world, only karma, the karmic nature, can help you or do something. But the spiritual understanding cannot come to you, not until you have the condition to develop the meditation or to connect to your true mind, your true nature. Not until you have that. Unless you are a very special being, like Hui Ning. He was born into the conditioned world without the mundane mind, without the mundane thinking mind. As such a being, wherever he is, even as an illiterate without any education, the moment he hears truth, he will awaken. You are here reconnected. The rest of the living being you have to cultivate, develop the training to connect. And it depends on your past cultivation. If you already develop it, then you will progress very fast. You will understand truth very fast. Then sometimes you don't even have to follow what the books say and what the teachers say. You just do what naturally within your nature. You will have the understanding and you will know what this thing is. Because the karmic nature will inherit a lot of, we call it a reminiscence of your cultivation in the past. That's why this nature can still remember when it was very young. I shared in the latest book that I gave out, Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way. If you don't have a copy, you should get a copy. And you read through that. I share a lot of things because there are conditions to share about my younger days. How this form of mind, this segmented life, go through life and develop all those condition to understand all those things. Even when I was at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old, I have these glimpses of my cultivation, but that time I didn't know what it is. I like to look up in the sky, look at nature. Then my nature, like, all of a sudden can merge into the nature. Then I saw the flow of nature. Beautiful. The plants, the tree, the wind, the nature, the climate, everything is like one with it. And there is this flow. My mind naturally silent when I was young. I don't know why. Then I saw this movement. It's like slow motion like that. Everything, the awareness is with it. But at that time, I don't know how to meditate. I don't know what sati is. My mind just flows with it. That's why later on I come to know that this is specific phenomenal awareness. This is sati, which this nature had trained before, perfected before. That's why I have glimpses of all this. Then deep inside my heart, I just knew this must be something that I have understood before. But at that time, I was so young, 8, 9 years old, I don't know what that was. Until later, when I grew up. That's why I had a lot of these glimpses, or we call it reminiscence of what you had done before. So all this will come back to you. Then when the condition is there, from the year 1986, everything just happened. Yeah. The teacher come, the guide come, the book come, everything come. And within 3 years, everything understood. You don't ask me how it happened. It has a lot to do with karma and the nature's law, and also the perfection and the understanding. Otherwise, all this is impossible to happen, to be the way it is. So, hopefully with this understanding, you will know why in the Heart Sutta, based on the question that Brother Tay asked, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva clearly mentioned, in true emptiness, the key word is in true emptiness, means after you have realized true emptiness, means you have already awakened, realized the stability of understanding, which is the awakening or realization of Nirvana, and it's so clear. Then you will have this perfect understanding that within the unconditioned, there is none of this that you learn in the conditioned world, including the Four Noble Truths. Yeah. That's why in the sutta it's mentioned no attainment, no delusion and all those things. But this pertains to the conditioned world. Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I think that ends for tonight. Thank you, Brother Teo, for explaining that, and I think it makes a bit clearer for all of us to understand. So in appreciation of your sharing with us the Dharma, I'd like to extend to you a token. Gan, old age, ha?
When are you all shifting officially?
We do not know yet. We just shifted over the other side. And all activities presently over here, it's for
until
meditation.
Such time when they decide to move. Okay.
We do not know what is Chief Raven's plan. Whether he wants to continue with this area or he wants to close it.
So
in the meantime, we continue to have the... Our usual activities, meditation, Dharma talk, and Sunday school. But no monks. Anyone wants to be one? So sadhu to all of you for coming
rejoice,
here and to Brother Teo. So let us
rejoice,
share
our
insight.
We will do the sharing of merit. Let us rejoice in all the wholesomeness first. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And may all these merits of wholesomeness be shared by all, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakantu loka sasana itta vata cha mehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let us pay homage to Tripaja. Then we end.